Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host and also the founder of Product Innovation Educators, where product managers learn to be product masters using the Product Mastery Roadmap. Get the roadmap for yourself at theeverydayinnovator.com. My guest has an impressive background in product management, having served in product manager roles at Apple, Intuit, and other companies before co-founding a company that solves an important problem for product managers, getting the voice of the customer in a timely and money-saving manner. The company is DigSight, and its co-founder and CMO is Jane Boutel. In this interview, you'll learn some of the problems product managers encounter when conducting and then sharing market research data, as well as how DigSight improves this process. I rarely interview company founders about their products, and this is not a commercial for DigSight, and I'm not receiving any form of compensation from them. But I contacted Jane because they are addressing a real need product managers and innovators have, and companies of all sizes. I think you'll find great value in what we talk about. To get the notes of the discussion with Jane, including a summary of the discussion and full transcript, and the link to a special innovation toolbox she shared, go to theeverydayinnovator.com/066. Enjoy the interview. Hi, Jane. Welcome to The Everyday Innovator.
Well, thanks, Chad. I'm really happy to be here.
Glad you are. This issue of customer research, market research, certainly a core topic for product managers and innovators. And since you co-founded a company dealing with this voice of the customer issue, I kind of want to start there with your experiences with market research and uncovering that voice of the customer. So thinking back on your product management days and what you've learned since then, what's worked and what did it? What kind of issues did you run into with this market research topic?
Well, it's funny. Getting close to the customer is really near and dear to my heart. And that started from one of my earlier experiences as a product manager. I was working for Intuit. In fact, I was the first product manager for QuickBooks. And so part of the Intuit culture is really getting close to the customer. In fact, they initiated something they called Follow Me Home, following the customer to their location and watching them use the product, which they still do today. And so I think that was kind of how I got my training in that kind of environment. So I've believed in this for a long, long time. But what I've also seen is that, practically speaking, it doesn't always work that well. And as a product manager, if you're in a small organization, you don't have a lot of resources available. And so you're kind of doing oftentimes little bits and pieces of consumer research, maybe talking to the sales guy or listening in to some tech support calls or something like that. But you don't necessarily get a real cohesive picture of what's going on with your consumers or your customers. But in a big organization, you know, you might have more access to resources, but still it tends to be kind of chopped up. Either it's some of those bits and pieces of the informal stuff, or sometimes they're doing big studies, but those can take, you know, literally months to execute a concept test. And at that point, you know, hopefully your innovation process is moving along more quickly than that. So you may already have missed the boat on getting findings that you can use. And so I think that's a lot of what I've seen is that getting that match between the research information coming in and the needs that that the organization has is often an issue.
Absolutely. And I love that. I didn't know this phrase, the Follow Me Home program, when you were at Intuit, doing that ethnography, the user observations to understand how users are actually interacting with the product in their environment. I have to remember that phrase, Follow Me Home. I like that.
Yeah, no, that's, we would go out to a lawyer's office or, a retail store, whoever was using QuickBooks, we'd watch them there.
And see what they did, right? Just see how they're using it. And that issue that when we do market research, it's not always a big cohesive picture that we need, or it just takes too long. By the time we get the actual information back, kind of the project has moved on, and they're at a point where they can't really incorporate our market research information anymore. The other thing that I ran into at times is just a resistance to the information itself for whatever cultural reasons, or sometimes it's incentives that are put in place by the stakeholders involved. There's resistance to the information that you find uncovered market research, and it's kind of, devalued. I don't know if you ran into that or not.
I have seen that a little bit. And I don't know so much that I've seen it devalued as I think it's easier. It's easy sometimes for people in an organization to kind of follow the last voice that they heard. So if they happen to talk to a customer who said, you know, oh, the product really needs XYZ feature, and that's the most important thing, that might be what takes precedence in their minds. And it may not represent customers more broadly, or it may be an incomplete picture. And so what I found is that a lot of times what happens is that people in the organization don't, you know, really get enough opportunity themselves to be close to the customer and to kind of, you know, be able to feel that empathy, feel that connection, feel that real understanding. And it is the job of the product manager to help them do that. Now, some of what you can do is by telling good stories and by figuring out how to frame it. But there are also research tools that allow a broader team to have a role, to have participation in a really efficient way. And I think that's one thing I know we've tried to do with DigSight that I think has really made a difference for people, is giving them that window into the customer in a way that they hadn't had before.
And pun intended, I really want to dig into some of those research tools you make available at DigSight, because this is a key issue, right? The world of product management has really shifted, I think in part because of agile and lean startup and these design thinking kind of influences, that we're focused so much more now on trying to build the right product early on before actual development starts, so that we have the right product concept. And your service sounds like a really good tool for uncovering what that right concept could be for a set of customers. So as you're addressing these sort of issues that we just talked through with DigSight now, let's talk clearly about the problem that DigSight was created to solve.
I think the problem that DigSight was created to solve was that companies have a growing need for that kind of understanding of their customers, their different audiences, what their needs are, what really what makes them tick, how they're responding to offerings or prospective offerings, the whole sort of story, that companies have a growing need for that, yet there isn't endless amount of budget or time, money, anything available for doing research. And so I think that companies sort of just got to this convergence where they said, this is getting crazy. We need to know. We don't have the money. In fact, if anything, with the Great Recession, I think budgets were getting cut pretty significantly. And so I'm a co-founder of DigSight, along with a woman named Monica Wingate, who's the CEO of DigSight. And she's a longtime market researcher, started in consumer products at General Mills and Pillsbury, went through ad agency, ran her own brand consulting agency, actually directed the research program at the University of Wisconsin in Madison on the MBA program. So she's got a wealth of knowledge there. And she was actually doing brand consulting and market research with companies, you know, several years ago. And the issue kept coming up. Yeah, need research, don't have budget. Hey, we've got this thing. We've got this Facebook page. We've got social media. Can't we use that as a way to connect with our consumers or customers? And she actually tried. She set up some research groups on Facebook groups. And the concept worked beautifully in terms of like, it's like a focus group plus, because people can do it on their own time, in their own context, and there's no one loudest voice in the room. But the downside was, on social media, privacy concerns, security concerns, data ownership. There's no kind of tools or capabilities for research built in. So she kind of basically hit a dead end with it for that reason, but it planted a seed. So she actually got to work, found a developer, and started working on a prototype of a research tool that gave the beautiful experience of that kind of social community, but was actually designed for research. And she and I connected when she had a prototype, and I took a look at it. I was working as a product. I was heading up product management for a software startup that's based in San Diego. And I saw that prototype and said, oh my, I could use that.
That's a pretty good testimony, right? When you're in the middle of the work.
Yeah, exactly. Because I was in a process of trying to figure out what direction we could go. It was a personal finance software and software. And we were trying to figure out some direction to go to get better usage, to get people to really stick with it more. And we had a ton of questions. And I was like, this is the kind of tool my audience, you know, I know I can reach them there. I know that they would respond well to this. And so anyway, she and I continued the conversation. And shortly, not too many months later, I joined as co-founder. And here I am today. So DigSight really does, the scenario kind of changes. DigSight came about because of that kind of need or opportunity. And so we have developed and continued to improve a platform that allows you to kind of do better than a Facebook for focus groups, really a private platform to bring a group of people together and not only discuss, you know, have discussions online, but also showing them images and videos, having them share their images, videos, having them share their experiences, and again, having the tools to be able to help make sense of all of that.
There's a few key points in here. When you talked about the problem that DigSight solves is really to understand the customer, what makes them tick, and companies having not really enough money or the time to do their own customer research the way they might traditionally do so. Both of those are pretty important sides of the equation, right? The money and time. And so many product managers I interact with, they feel frustrated because they don't have the time that they want to spend with customers. Right, in a lot of industries, we tend to use that 30% sort of
right.
rule of thumb. And there's product managers go, 30% with customers? I'm lucky if I get 5% a year, and maybe not even that, right? Because they're just so overwhelmed. And solutions that can help them get the information they need and know where customers are going and what's important to them and save them in the time of the process, I think are really important. And because of that, I was kind of expecting money to not be part of this equation, right? Because there are certainly product managers and companies who would pay for a service to help them with that problem because they don't have the time. But you've also set this up, so it sounds like that compared to what companies have been doing, that this also can save the money on their projects too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that there is, when you do a lot of traditional market research, or has been done face to face, the kind of ethnographic research that you made reference to before, and there's real beauty to that, and I'm not saying throw it all out by any means, but that tends to be very expensive research to do. You need the facilities, you need to get people there at a certain time, and it's a costly process. And so I think that what we've seen is companies looking for, in some cases, alternatives, or in some cases, a blend of research methods that's really going to meet their needs. And I know, for example, a company that we were talking with that's using DigSight, what they looked at was that they were doing a lot of usability testing using some really good tools that exist, online platforms that exist for doing usability testing. And they felt like they got a great read on an immediate issue with, is this particular screen working, or this particular function? Mm-hmm. What are people doing with that? So I think they felt like they got that piece, but what I think they felt like they were missing was what someone there actually referred to as that 360-degree view of their customer. Who is this person? What makes them tick? What's keeping them up at night? Who is that person overall, and how does that pertain to the business, to the problem I'm trying to solve for them? And so what they found, and what other companies we work with have found, is that bringing together a group of people into a DigSight community, we could either do a short thing like what we call a DigSight sprint, which is basically 1 week to get feedback on a particular topic area. And that's a great way to start. But what also a lot of people end up doing is bringing a group of people together and realizing, it would be really great if I could kind of touch base with these people periodically throughout, say, a product development process. Or throughout a particular life cycle, whatever that is for a project, and kind of bring almost a little advisory team that they have at their disposal. And people do that. So they pull together a group of people that meet whatever criteria they're looking for. It can be a cross section of people. And, you know, this is not huge numbers. They're typically maybe 20 or 25 up to a maximum of 7,500. So not, these are not, thousand person communities. But getting that group of people together and being able to kind of get to know a little bit about them and show them things, get feedback, and then you show them the next revision and get feedback on that. So it is truly that kind of an agile, iterative process that, you know, that we're trying to do in the products that we're developing. It kind of mirrors that in the research that we're doing as well.
So it's kind of a sprint approach to customer research that might fit a agile sprint, you know, a scrum methodology for development.
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny, we as our own company within DigSight, our all of our product development, obviously, we're doing an agile approach and we're doing sprints. And so we just, we're sort of taking that through all aspects of our company and the way we think about how we approach.
And it's smart. A lot of companies are in the same place that they are making that transition, you know, and still maybe messing with some different system development life cycles, but certainly doing more with agile approaches. Or they're already there, or they started there, right? Because they're young companies. You made a contrast I think is really important I want to ask you about. There are a lot of these sites that have popped up in the last year that provide usability testing, right? And at least the ones I'm familiar with, what they typically do is they do a really good job of A-B testing. And so they're largely designed for software sort of products. And you can put up different user interfaces, and it will automatically help you figure out how people are using them, and then you get insights into how to make your user interface experience better for the customer. And so they provide really good quantitative data. One limitation is they don't work for all kinds of products, right? And they just give us that quantitative perspective about how the user at that point was interacting with the product. And you talked about that this is really going beyond usability testing to provide that 360-degree view of the customer that brings in the qualitative data perspectives of that customer. Is that fair?
Absolutely. And I think that that's one of the things that I found that product managers have really valued from what they can get from more of this kind of a qualitative platform. Because if you're trying to, you know, get buy-in for a new product or product extension or new version and a set of features, you know, quantitative data is very, very valuable. But ultimately, again, I'm coming back to telling a story. You need to tell a story, and it needs to have people in it. And you need to understand who those people are and what need you're solving. And there needs to be an emotional connection there. And you don't get that from a survey, and you don't get that from quantitative usability testing. Mm-hmm. That's all very, very valuable data. I'm not downplaying the value of that, but it has a different purpose. And it tells you the what's, but it doesn't really explain the why's at all. And this is what this kind of qualitative, like a community discussion like DigSight, that's really helping you understand the whys. Why does this matter? What are people really trying to do, and why are they trying to do it? And helps you make sure that you're coming up with solutions that, you know, have a better shot of actually meeting the need or solving the problem.
I just want to underscore this with the everyday innovators listening, that this is an important point, because I've seen in the last year or two, in some areas, at least, product managers and companies moving towards this trend of data is everything, and they don't make any product management decision without data to back up that decision. And at times, frankly, they're spinning their wheels constructing tests that don't actually uncover the information that they need to make a logical decision, and they're losing track of the story that's going on. And story and storytelling is the single theme that has recurred over the more than a year that I've been doing this podcast, of how important it is to understand the story of the customer and the story of your product and how those things meet up. And I just want to emphasize the importance of having that full view. And I like how you said the 360-degree view of the customer.
Yeah, no, I I think it really it makes a huge difference. And frankly, what's been most interesting to me is how that story gets buy-in within companies. A great example, a really great customer of ours makes consumer appliances, they were using DigSight within the company, and you know that was fine. It was doing well, but they did some customer beta testing of some products, and it happened that a couple of people on their very senior level, among their senior level executives, were beta testers for some of the new appliances, and so they used the appliance, and they were sharing all their feedback through DigSight, through our community platform. So, you know, try this feature and tell us what you think and take a picture of the inside of your appliance and, you know, do all kinds of things sharing this. And these, not only did the executives get to experience their own products, but they got to hear from other users firsthand the things they loved, the frustrations they had, the fact that if it's hard to clean, I'm going to be really unhappy and it's really going to bug me. And, you know, all those kinds of specific things that might sound nitpicky if some product manager comes back and reports it. But when they're hearing it repeatedly from consumers, it really had an impact. And they, you know, all of a sudden they're sitting around. Apparently, we heard reported to us that at an executive committee meeting, they're sitting around talking about their experiences in this community with consumers because they experienced it firsthand. And it was no longer abstract, it was no longer data. These were people who were trying to put together Thanksgiving dinner and were hitting a stumbling block because this appliance wasn't doing what they needed it to do. You know, that kind of thing. And so
it becomes a pretty stressful Thanksgiving when the turkey is not ready.
Yes, exactly. You got it. And so it's just really interesting. And it also becomes a pretty exciting Thanksgiving when you realize that your product that you're providing, you hear from them how it helped them create this meal that they're so proud of, that they're sharing with their family and friends. And so I think both the problems that it lets you see and lets your wider organization see and feel, as well as sharing that sense, wow, we're actually affecting someone's life in a really positive way through the products that we're offering. I think both of those things are really, really important. And that's the kind of view, that's what we've been able to see with our product because we offer a community that people can participate in, but others in the organization can observe and see. They don't have to be participating. They can just be observing and watching and really watching it unfold. And I think that's been very powerful.
And I think it's an important point. Puts in a better light what I was awkwardly trying to describe earlier about when we do market research and the organization might devalue it in the sense that they didn't have that experience collecting it. And so ways the companies have dealt with this in the past is, well, maybe we go out and we do video interviews with the customers as part of customer research, and we can bring that back to the development team and let them see it first person, you know, from the customers. And what you described in this scenario with the consumer appliance customer is providing that rich experience for others in the organization to understand their customers.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. I'm curious in this, it almost sounds like there might be some crowdfunding sort of benefits. What I mean by this, crowdfunding platforms like Kickstarter, you know, they don't just help us raise money. That might've been the original, how they were envisioned, but they really help prepare a customer base to love a product. And they help provide some insights into how to position that product in the future. And I'm curious if you have found, as you are doing these DigSight sprints, and like the example working with the customer appliance company, if you have found that even through the research and getting the people involved, you're starting to find maybe a loyal base of customers because they were involved, they were kind of invested in this process. And if you're not just getting feedback about the products themselves, but helping to prepare marketing messages and that go-to-market strategy and some of the further things that we might think about when it comes to product concepts.
Oh, no, absolutely. In fact, I mean, DigSight, our platform is commonly used by companies at not only for product related topics and issues, but very much for all the way through the kind of marketing, branding, because again, I mean, ultimately, it's just a different side of the same coin where you're really trying to understand that consumer and those and the benefits that resonate with them and the messages that resonate with them. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, yeah, no, we're seeing that, and we're definitely finding that that is a really, really another really, really important area where that consumer or customer knowledge is just as important. So.
That's really exciting. I'm going to have to find a way to be a DigSite customer so I can learn more about how to save time and money doing this with you. I would like to walk through kind of the specific steps. And if you can do this in a real-world scenario with a customer you've had or one that we put together, that's okay. But how do you go about finding the things I'm thinking about? How do you find the exact customers that would be appropriate for analyzing the, you know, the product we have? What that community interaction is like, the time frame. You talked about 1 week sprints. Walk us through what this actually looks like from the customer perspective. And I mean the customer using DigSite, the people engaging you to help with the research.
Okay. Yeah. So for the actual company that has hired us to or worked with us to do that. I'll give you a recent example of a consumer products company, a food company. They have packaged food that they sell, and they in this case this was probably a cross between product and marketing, because they were looking at a complete packaging redesign, and they had done a lot of work on a lot of the mechanics of the packaging and how they, you know, what the form was going to be and a lot of changes to it. But they just felt like they didn't quite have it right in terms of what they were presenting to the consumer and, you know, the sort of the messaging and the whole presentation, just the whole thing, just they felt like they hadn't quite hit it yet. And they saw their production deadline, you know, their manufacturing deadline looming ahead. So they wanted to get something, they wanted to get some feedback quickly. So they came to us and told us that they wanted to get input on a packaging redesign. They told us what kind of consumers they were looking for. You know, people who had familiarity with certain kinds of brands and ate this category of food mm-hmm. with a certain kind of frequency, household income, X level. You know, they were pretty broad geographically, all around the U.S. in this case, pretty much, although they had certain areas they wanted to target. And so we actually have a kind of our own sort of proprietary recruiting process that we do to bring people in to be a part of one of these DigSite research communities. And we call that social find recruiting. And we actually are able to do the recruiting through social media, leveraging all that targeting and knowledge that social media platforms gather about all of us who are using them. Mm-hmm. They collect all kinds of information about our behaviors, our topics of conversation, our actions, you know, as I remind my teenagers on a regular basis, they're watching you at all times. So they know who we are. And so as a result, we're able to use that data and do some very, very refined, sophisticated targeting to get people who match to the criteria. And we go through additional screening beyond just the social media first pass. But through that kind of multi-step process, we're able to get people who not only meet the criteria, but also have demonstrated an ability to, frankly, to be coherent and conversant in an online community platform, because that's what's really important. If you're looking for someone to fill out a 3-question survey for $1, you know, that's a whole different story. But if you're looking for someone to really be an engaged member of a group, whether it's for a few days or for a year, you really need, a certain type of person. And so that's what we help people find. So that's the first step.
And in that process, what is the incentive for those people to participate in the research?
typically money of some amount. It can be for what we're calling our dig site sprints, which again, over four days of spending about 10 minutes a day over the course of a week, they typically get about $25 for that, sometimes more depending on what they're being asked to do, but roughly $25. What's interesting is that some companies will offer incentives that are not monetary, or in addition to monetary incentives, will go with some really interesting things. And this depends on what your product is, but particularly if you have a product that people are passionate about or is in a category that people are very excited about, sometimes you can offer them things that are interesting and fun in their category that aren't necessarily cash. For example, a company we work with that is very involved, has a lot of their customers are gourmet chefs and really people who are very foodie type people. They brought their corporate chef on for some exclusive cooking sessions where the only people who could tune in were the people in their dig site community. So kind of a cool thing, you know, there was no cost, you know, no dollars per se, but people got to get a special little cooking lesson from a special chef. So
sure. So, you know, something exclusive that made it appealing. Yeah. So if you ever get a call from Elon Musk and he's looking for some research and he's offering a Tesla for participants, sign me up. I just want you to know about that.
Yeah, well, you know, that's I'll be right there in line with you. So,
like, that would be a good incentive. Okay, you have a proprietary system for recruiting participants. Yep. What happens next?
Okay, and also I should mention, companies can also, if you know your own user base and you want to bring a group of them in, that works great too. So you don't have to go with outsiders. Next is really understanding, you know, what you're trying to accomplish and what we have that can best meet your needs. We have, as I've mentioned, these short dig site sprints, and that's a pretty much turnkey kind of week-long project you can do. We have product concept sprints, so that's designed. You've got maybe a couple of product concepts you're toying with, and you want to improve upon them, see what people respond to, get a better understanding of people's reaction to them. There's a sprint for that. So for example, I have someone I'm working with right now on one. They're presenting to a major retailer in about a week and a half on about this product, and they want to have some consumer feedback to help give them a more solid pitch for the presentation that they're doing. So that's an example, but a lot of times people just do this as part of the development process to get that sort of refined feedback. So that's one type. We also do a similar sort of thing for marketing concepts. So for the people who are involved more on the marketing side of things, whether it's ad promotion, kind of branding work, we can do that kind of thing in a week. And then we have what we call our custom sprint, which is a bucket. If you have a question you're trying to answer, let us help you formulate a short, over the course of a few day type of project, where we can bring that group of people together and bring them into a dig site community. Again, think of it like a little specialized Facebook group, if you will, have activities going out to people every day for 4 days. And then at the end, you can get reporting throughout, but then at the end, summary reporting to kind of pull it all together and help you see, you know, what kind of insights you got out of this. And also, again, get the key quotes and the words of the customer so you can actually use them to be that support for the decisions that you're making as a result from that. So that's the typical kind of entry point that people are taking with us. You know, with DigSite, the other way we see people also going is, again, bringing together a group, whether it's to go for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, again, where they're talking to them periodically, maybe it's once or twice a week over a period of time, or maybe it's once a month over a period of time, and using that as checkpoints to bring ideas along and kind of iterate with them as they go through.
Very good. I appreciate you running through those steps. And as listeners know, Jay and I I don't know if I ever have before, bring on guests onto this podcast just to promote a company, right? It's always offer value to product managers and innovators and what they're doing. And the reason why I wanted to talk with you so much, though, was because this is a key aspect of what product managers need to be doing. And as I mentioned, we are trying to move up in that product management, from idea to launching a product. We're trying to move up our understanding of what the product actually needs to be much earlier in that process. So we're not wasting dollars developing what customers don't want. And services like DigSite really are appealing because they provide important tools for us to get answers. And I'm sure someone listening could try to replicate the sort of process internally in their company. And I appreciate you sharing a lot of those steps. But the point is, we need this customer research and that 360-degree view. And I'm curious what you've learned so far about market research and voice of the customer since you've been involved with DigSite, because I'm sure there's new insights coming up as you've been working with customers. You have one you could share?
I think we're always learning about it. I think that the basic thing is that we really need to make sure that we're thinking about research not as an end, but as a real means to something. And so it's important not to let the research process kind of get in the way of, focusing on what you're trying to accomplish. And that's, I think, something that I've seen in organizations where research can become so bogged down that as I said, kind of gets in the way. And so I think the thing that I've seen at DigSite that has been the most rewarding to me is that when people really focus on a business problem and we can help give them a research capability that really aligns with that so that they're having a tool where they can kind of check in at the relevant points that they need to help answer the business question, that's been, really, really important. So I'd say, again, your number one thing is understanding what the business problem you're trying to solve is, what the question you're trying to answer mm-hmm. is, and not letting that the process stuff kind of get in the way of focusing there.
Make sure we're driving towards the results that we want.
Yep, ultimately.
Very good. I appreciate you sharing what you've learned about Voice of the Customer and what you're doing there with DigSite now. And as listeners know, I always ask for an innovation quote from my guests. What quote did you bring and why did you choose that one?
Okay. My quote today is, "There is no elevator to success. You have to take the stairs." And that's a Zig Ziglar quote. And I love that, not only because I've always taken the stairs everywhere, so that's but literally, but in reality, I mean, I think sometimes it's so easy to look at, successful companies or products and think, wow, they just, overnight, look, they just appeared from nowhere.
Yeah, the overnight success, yep.
Yeah, but it's really not the way it works. And those of us, I mean, I was very fortunate to be, with the QuickBooks team at a very, very early stage for a product that has been very, very successful. But I know the amount of incredibly hard work that went into launching a product that, now owns the lion's share of the market. And so it takes a ton of work. And some days those stairs, it's like, slogging your way up. Mm-hmm. That's how you get the results. And so I just like that. I just liked that because it's very visual and I just sort of I could just picture it. So that was the one I took away.
It's great because it's a good reminder that we need to stay fit. I give you credit for always taking the steps, something I need to do more. And there, the point is there are no overnight successes. It's just hard work, one step at a time until you get discovered. And all of a sudden it seems like you're an overnight success.
Yeah. And of course, a little luck is always a good thing.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt. That's right. Very good. Well, let's wrap up. How can listeners find out more about the work that you're doing there specifically if they're curious about looking into maybe using a DigSite service? And I'm always glad to hear if there's any special offers available for listeners.
Okay. Well, again, well, Chad, I really appreciate having had the chance to talk with you and ultimately to talk with all your listeners out there. So, yeah, if people want to find out about what we're doing and get a little bit of information, you're welcome to go to our website, which is digsite.com. That's digsite.com. But I actually created a special landing page just for the listeners of this podcast today. So it's digsite.com/innovation. And on there, I have some tools. We've done some webinars and other work in the past with a guy named Darren Eich, who has written some books on innovation and is a really interesting guy. And I think what I would call kind of a lean startup approach to innovation, mm-hmm. Very nimble. And anyway, he worked with us to put together an innovation toolkit, which you'd have access to from that page, as well as some webinar recordings, and also an offer for anyone who might be interested in looking at the DigSite Sprint that I made reference to. There'll be a code on there for a discount of $250 on a DigSite Sprint, and that is good through the end of June. So there's some time for that.
Excellent. I appreciate you sharing the resource for digsite.com/innovation and that innovation toolkit there. And thank you for making the discount available too. That will certainly make it more appealing for people to look into services. And to be clear, listeners, I am not a customer of DigSite right now. I just really do understand the problem they're trying to solve and that this is core to product management and innovation. And I think it's worthwhile to look into. Anyone that needs to do more customer research and market research and have this problem with not enough money or not enough time, good possible solutions here. Jane, thanks again. I appreciate you taking time talking about the company, and I wish you and your co-founder and all that you do great success.
Well, thanks, Chad. I really appreciate the time, and I thank you for the invitation.
Thank you so much for listening. I love that this podcast is helping so many product managers and innovators. The first episode was over a year ago, and it was just me talking about what the podcast would be. And it had about 100 listens. And now we're well over 10,000 listens each month. We still have a lot of work to do together to help product managers and innovators excel. And I'm counting on the everyday innovators helping with this. You can do this simply by telling other people about this podcast. Share it on your LinkedIn or Facebook account, or email it to a friend. I really appreciate you doing that. Just go to the show notes for this episode at theeverydayinnovator.com/066 and click on the LinkedIn or Facebook share buttons or email the URL to a colleague. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training your customers will love you for. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.